take roll call, please.
Representative Burkhart? Representative Burkhart? Excuse. Representative Larson?
Here.
Representative Schwartz?
Here.
Representative Summers?
Here.
Representative Walters?
Here.
Representative Wilson?
Here.
Senator Dockstader?
Here.
Senator Driscoll?
Here.
Senator Hastert?
Here, but wounded.
Senator Landon?
Here.
Chairman Nicholas?
Here.
Chairman Burns?
Here.
Representative Burkhart?
He's excused.
He's here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Joint Appropriations Committee for another round of fun. Our first item on the agenda is governor's letters, and we've got Carrie Jo Gray here to present them to us. So if there are not any other preliminary matters, I think we'll jump right in. And Carrie Jo, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The governor has submitted four letters to this body, and I brought them over early, so I don't know the number order that they've been numbered in, but we have a letter on local government funding, letter on contingent appropriations, a letter on education coordinator in the Department of Education to the Board of Education, and a letter on UW programs. These letters, to give you the best information, fall under various expertises in our office. And so here with me today are Alex Kane and Mary Kay Hill. And so Mary Kay is actually going to present the UW and education coordinator letters to you. So if you have any questions, she would be the most knowledgeable to answer those. And Alex Kane will present the contingent appropriations from the LSRA. And I'm prepared to present local governments. So since we start with UW programs, I'll just turn this over to Mary Kay, if that's all right with you, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. Welcome, Mary Kay. Hit the sneeze. There you go.
Hit the sneeze. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mary Kay Hill. Our first letter involves the University of Wyoming. The letter covers two areas. One letter, or one aspect, which is the University of Wyoming Student Enrollment Management Program is part of the University of Wyoming budget request, which was the only exception budget the governor approved in that area. And so you do have, when you get to the UW budget number 67, you'll have a governor's rec that's part of that budget. So just for your process. To talk quickly about that enrollment management program, I would emphasize that you know the University of Wyoming declined slightly in their enrollment this last fall, and their new president, Lori Nichols, has placed an emphasis on student recruitment and student enrollment as a way to increase opportunities at the University of Wyoming, and the governor supports her wholeheartedly in that effort. In order to be more sophisticated about the way the university tracks potential students, recruits, and retains those students, they need a software program that is more sophisticated than what they currently have. You're aware that the university is making a significant investment in their fiscal management program, and one of the governor's first questions then was, why couldn't this be part of that if you're doing all that technology? It is, in fact, an entirely separate endeavor, but the timing is great in order to bring a lot of that technology online. Questions about the enrollment system?
Any questions? Yeah. Senator Lamb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Kay, thanks for that. Having done that for 30 years, my curiosity is just kind of centers around why there wasn't a progression on that front in terms of software. In other words, it just feels like that amount of an expenditure, we must have just held on to a software program and then kind of fallen off a cliff or something. I'm just curious. Just a little curious about how we got to quite a point that it takes that kind of investment in our enrollment effort over there. Anything more you can tell us about that program? I mean, what are some of the things it's going to do for us, and et cetera?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lannan, Chris Boswell is here. I will say the reason for a sudden investment now is probably the arrival of President Nichols, who identified that this hadn't been going on. But I would like to defer, if you'd like additional information, to Mr. Boswell, who can talk to you about the specifics of that program.
Make sure both buttons are on there, Chris.
We're technology savvy here.
You got to keep it close.
Okay. Broadcasting major for UW, and that shouldn't be a problem, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee and fellow broadcasters. Mr. Chairman, the reason for the change is absolutely as was just described. These are circumstances and efforts that were not sufficiently vigorous in the past and not sufficiently advanced, I guess is the way I would describe it. What has occurred over the past year is that we've had an outside look at UW systems that includes an outside look at UW management in the overall and administration. And what we have in that process is the Huron Consulting Group that has been vigorously reviewing our current practices and describing pretty significant shortfalls in the way we pursue our recruiting. I will be candid with members of the committee and tell you that I do not have particularly strong details that I can offer on the nature of this, other than that I don't think we've been where we needed to be for quite a number of years. The new president walked in the door and said, this won't do. We have to approach this in a more professional, more systematic manner, more strategic manner. And one aspect of doing this is this enrollment management effort that you see described in this request.
Chris, how did you come up with the $475,000? What's the ongoing cost of that program once it's up and stood up? And what component of that funding model is going to come from the other side of the funding block for UW versus one-time funding from us?
Mr. Chairman, I believe there's an assumption that there will be ongoing costs related with this and that a significant amount of it will be borne out of the Section 2 budget rather than the Section 1. I do not have a figure for ongoing costs because we haven't determined what that system is going to be exactly. And so I will have to admit that I don't have an answer for you on that. This may or may not be the appropriate time to mention this, Mr. Chairman, but there is some additional detail in the materials that were provided by the university a few days ago, the answers to the committee's questions from our December hearing. A lot of details on what's going to happen with this appropriation depends in large part on the efforts as we go forward. We're attempting to determine what some of those efforts will be.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Boswell, does the university have a calculation on the approximate net gain per new enrollee?
Mr. Chairman, that depends on how you want to look at it. It's a complicated circumstance. If you get a new enrollee and offer that student some scholarship assistance or a reduced tuition benefit or tuition level or something along those lines, that's a different calculation than someone who simply walks in the door.
Follow up, Mr. Chair? Yeah, I would just, taking all that at just the raw, if an enrollee comes before we do any of those calculations.
Mr. Chairman, if you are asking how much does a new student cost, I don't think that the university is prepared to offer that. I had the question from the speaker a couple of days ago. If a physics class has 22 people in it and then through enrollment increases has 23 the next semester, is there an associated cost to the university? Not necessarily in that level. I've been at UW and heaven knows I'm I ain't no pro, Mr. Chairman, but I have witnessed attempts to calculate just what you're asking, and every time someone comes up with a number, the next day somebody shoots holes in it. So I think it's very difficult to try to estimate. If you add one non-resident student, I think it's safe to say that obviously the financial income, if you will, associated with that person is going to be significantly larger than a resident student. But how much does each student cost the University of Wyoming? It's going to depend on what that student majors in part. That's the nature, Mr. Chairman, not to belabor the point, but Mr. Chairman, that's the nature of the president's proposal of the past few months for program fees. And a far more vigorous differentiation in terms of the costs associated with particular majors, particular classes, and the like.
And so, Chris, before we sit down, I think we all agree that over the past few years, we've been trying to nudge the university to increase their enrollment and realizing that in terms of whatever that sweet spot is, I think the president came up with if we had 16,000 or 17,000 students, we'd kind of be at the maximum of our dollars per faculty, staff kind of thing before we have to go to the next level. And so we are encouraging that, and obviously in order to do that, it just requires money to get there. And I think for our comfort zone, what we would like to know, and I haven't seen the handout, what was presided, if it answers the question, is if we come up with $475,000, then that is our contribution to that concept. Then what what Section 2 dollars, what combination is the UW going to be doing hand-in-hand with us to get there? And so that I think we would be more comfortable if we had a feeling that if we spend part of the money, then you spend part of the money. And so just a better understanding of the overall joint effort to get there, I think that would be useful for us as opposed to just saying, just give us 475 so we can go work on this problem. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'll attempt to provide that to the committee.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Do you have any breakdown as to how much of this is going to be on personnel and how much of this is actually on a computer program and whatever else is going to be spent on?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe a significant amount of this would be on personnel. This is intended to be a one-time appropriation. So I don't believe there is any intent for the university to hire personnel using this particular appropriation. There are going to be personnel adjustments, I suppose is the diplomatic word, within student affairs. As you may have seen, student affairs and the recruiting effort that currently is housed in student affairs is going to move to academic affairs. There is a recognition that what we do to attract students to the University of Wyoming can perhaps be more vigorously prosecuted out of academic affairs rather than student affairs. When you have a change like that, there are inevitably going to be some significant changes to the personnel levels in the various departments.
All right, thank you.
Ready.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the second part of the request for the University of Wyoming is an investment, a continuing investment in the University Science Initiative. Listened during the Governor's State of the State speech when he was able to feature a University of Wyoming student from Grable, Wyoming, who was able as a result of opportunities in the Science Initiative to take advantage of extraordinary research and operation opportunities. And the governor's request here is, frankly, minimal given the state's fiscal situation. But the extraordinary success of the Science Initiative, impact that the Science Initiative is having on students on campus, impact that the initiative is having in teaching and learning on campus in the way instruction is being delivered, governor felt that it was really important to send a signal to the university and to potential students and to, frankly, even to K-12, we're going to continue investing in the science effort. So these are $500,000 one time, given the nature of the state's fiscal situation, write up the remaining biennium and see what happens there. The science initiative is one of Governor Mead's top priorities in terms of what he believes will move the state forward, will expand our economy, give us an opportunity for our students, for our Wyoming students, to have opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise, and to attract this kind of research and interest in the sciences that is going to be key to moving forward. Science initiative, by way of further explanation, is really very closely linked to the important investment that you have made, that we have made in the Engineering and Applied Sciences College, which is also seeing some significant success. And part of that is that those engineering students also need support in the sciences. So you have these two that are really very symbiotic in terms of their relationship. So the $500,000, which the university understands is one time, but believes is worthy and would be an important investment on their part, would go towards program activities, towards the learning active mentoring program, and to increase the number of research scholars that they can pull into their program. And again, I'll just emphasize that what they're doing is really having an impact on undergraduate students and their potential.
Mr. Kocher.
So this is not construction money. This is to the program itself, and this is to help bring in additional people. I'm trying to understand. It sounds like an ongoing program, so why do you want one-time money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, this is program money. That's very important that it will go directly to teachers and students. Part of the governor's message here is that this is a symbolic appropriation that will allow us to send that important signal to students and to campus that this is a state priority. So it won't go towards personnel. It will go towards the teaching and learning opportunities that are there. And then the university will come back to you with information on how that science initiative is progressing, generally the numbers of students enrolled, those sorts of things. And, of course, we let Mr. Boswell give up the microphone too soon, but this is a program that the governor believes is very successful and is very important to the future of the state. And even in times of restricted resources, he thinks this is an important investment and an important signal to send that this is how we move Wyoming forward.
Mr. Chairman, I still don't understand. Actually, I'm even more confused. Now, you mentioned that it's not going toward personnel. What is it going toward? And again, if it's an ongoing program, why is it one-time money?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll have Chris Boswell refer to that.
Mr. Chairman, the university certainly appreciates the governor's support of the science initiative. As you'll remember, the legislature appropriated more than $2 million in ongoing appropriations for the science initiative's programmatic efforts. That exists in the current biennial budget. The Senate chairman is correct that what is typically described as programmatic elements of the science initiative do involve ongoing costs. But perhaps the committee will remember the testimony from Greg Brown, who's been the campus leader of the science initiative in terms of programs, as well as the facility where I think you'll remember his passion and his dedication when he described what I guess I'll put into my terms, Mr. Chairman, how he could take advantage of a one-time appropriation to significantly expand the number of students, as an example, that are going to be included in the undergraduate research scholars program. I think you could perhaps think of it as a bubble, I suppose. that he would potentially vastly increase the number of students who are paired up with faculty members who are then involved with undergraduate research opportunities on campus, far more than is available through the various opportunities on campus now. In addition, a more vigorous and more broadly imposed learning active mentoring program, as well as, again, the competitive research innovation program. All of these things are items which can be significantly expanded and then contracted again to take advantage of a one-time appropriation of programmatic funds.
Ms. German, if it's that good, then why contract it again? And I'm still confused as to why it's one-time money.
Mr. Chairman, by virtue of the fact that this is a supplemental request, I think we treat most of these as one time. I mean, so this will come back to you in another year, possibly as a request to make it ongoing permanent funds. But we're in a one-year period here, and so the idea is let's put $500,000 in now. A year from now, we'll be back with another biennial budget. If we have resources, they may be in. If not, we're simply not in an environment where the governor felt comfortable making a permanent ongoing request.
Please proceed.
Yep, Ms. German. So, in fact, it is going to be an ongoing request. It's a one-time request now, knowing you're going to be asking for more later. And the other question is, if it's a good idea now as a supplemental request, why wasn't it a good idea a year ago when we were doing the actual biennial budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, the University of Wyoming Science Initiative, actually the plan that was submitted to the legislature over a year ago, has significantly more funding down the road. The whole plan was to invest, to see the success, and invest again. So the $2.3 million you appropriated last session was significantly lower than the university's request for the program. I can't remember the exact number, but the hope is that you, like an acorn, you will plant this, and in fact, it will grow. It will have increased needs and increased success that we hope to fund. So this isn't a shot in the dark. This is part of a plan that was thought out by the governor's science initiative task force. It presented to this legislature, I think, 2 or 3 years in process, and is, in fact, a contribution towards meeting those goals the science task force presented to you.
Further questions? All right, I think we've covered that sufficiently for now. Let's move on to the next letter, shall we?
As long as I'm up here, Mr. Chairman, we'll go ahead and discuss the letter involving the State Board of Education coordinator. It's letter number 3. To refresh the recollection of the committee, last year there was an extensive debate in this committee and then on both floors about the coordinator position for the State Board of Education. And your compromise is represented in the language that is in the letter, footnote number 4, to the State Department, Wyoming Department of Education budget. You required that a report be given to your Joint Education Committee by both the State Board and by the State Superintendent. And frankly, there have been continuing varying views on the value of this position. The governor has always believed that if the State Board of Education, which has been given enormous responsibilities and you add to them each year, believes that their highest priority is to have an individual who serves as their coordinator, he believes they should have one. That was his position during your debate last year. It continues to be his debate today. Last year, you funded the position for 1 year, contingent on these reports coming back to the Joint Education Committee. I'm really relieved that Representative Summers is here because he can help fill in some of the debate that occurred in the Education Committee. Your Education Committee with a strong majority, supported the continuing the coordinator, and in fact had originally moved legislation that would take the State Board out of the Department of Education completely and put it in a separate agency. I won't speak for your chairman, but it appeared that they became concerned that that perhaps was not a good thing to do in this time, again, of fiscal restraint that we might be adding to government. So what happened, given the rest of your deadlines and the way things worked, the committee adjourned without the capacity to forward new legislation, or so it just sat there. So I have consulted with both of your chairmen, and I will hope that Representative Summers backs me up. The governor is asking you to continue the provision of the footnote for one more year. It can be permanent if you choose to make it permanent. He does believe that it should be continued as you provided for in the last session.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that's fairly accurate. The Joint Education Committee did support this coordinator position. I do have a question, though. Could you speak a little bit about the liaison position that exists between the WD and the State Board of Education and thought about the option of actually converting that liaison position to the coordinator position? So could you speak to what the liaison specifically does?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I am so let me say that I'm as not an employee of the Department of Education now, and the quote-unquote liaison position, which is in your statute, in the Department of Education superintendent's duties, there is a provision that the superintendent must appoint an individual to serve as a liaison between the department and the State Board of Education. It is, in a previous life, something, a role that I filled. So based on that experience, I can tell you that position traditionally offered support to the State Board of Education, making sure that whatever the State Board of Education needed to carry out its duties, they received the proper support from the Department of Education. In many provisions in your statutes, you say the State Board shall, through the Department of Education, write standards or administer an assessment or all of those things. So each unit within the department will at various times have a connection to the work of the State Board of Education, and the liaison position, it's historic. It predated any of my time with that. And I would emphasize that liaison position's duties are not limited just to the State Board. So we're talking about that's within the Wyoming Department of Education. State Board of Education coordinator is exclusive to the State Board, but again helps them with those. So for example, you passed as part of your accountability bill a provision to administer professional judgment panels, which would provide for cut scores for the determinations on school accountability. You assign that responsibility exclusively to the State Board of Education to assemble those panels and then to make those determinations. The State Board coordinator is the person who did all that work, who helped them assemble the educators who were part of the panels to then report back to the board and to move that work forward. So that is a brief description, I think, representative of the differences between the two positions.
Representative Saunders.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On a follow-up question, and I know this to be true, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit, that over the course of time, the legislature has assigned more duties to the State Board of Education than had been in the past. Could you speak a little bit to that? And, I mean, that's some of the reason we heard for the need for a coordinator is the duties have increased in that agency or that board over a course of time. Can you speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, sure. as with all things in education, whether it's education funding or your accountability systems or your assessment systems, things have increased in terms of the load and in the complexity. So your State Board of Education is expected to, again, through the department, but sometimes not through the department, establish the policies, which are then implemented by the Department of Education in a full range of issues. You debated, for example, last year, changes to our statewide assessment system, which were also part of your accountability system. The State Board of Education is the entity that establishes the determinations for your schools, meeting expectations, not meeting expectations, exceeding expectations. Those determinations are all made by the State Board of Education, and that's a significant and important responsibility. The State Board of Education just passed in this last year new science content standards, which you might recall was a very protracted process involving a pretty delicate conversation about some political themes like climate change. They had to thread that needle. They did so successfully. They did so in partnership with the Department of Education. But again, it was a major lift for people who are citizens. There are 11 members of the State Board of Education plus the state superintendent, and those are citizens who come from communities to make those significant issues. I think the State Board reported to the Education Committee that they had had something like 11 meetings over 22 days in 1 year.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mrs. Hill, you talked about the you were discussing the liaison position and indicated that it, with the Department of Health, not only is associated with the Board of Education, but also has other requirements associated with that. But could the coordinator position for the Board of Education act in that liaison position back to the Department of Education?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's not a position the governor has taken. Equally, that conversation between you and the state superintendent, I think the state superintendent has told us no. But I wouldn't want to be the person speaking for her. That's a person in her agency, and I'm reluctant to wade into that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duxer.
I'll take you back, and I certainly respect your presentation and the request with the letter. I was the dissenting vote on the committee for this last year. I didn't understand it. We've got well-qualified people in the Department of Education. We've got a state board that's full of professionals, well-educated people, and there we were adding one more position. This education world just keeps growing by assistant to new directors, and all of them with six-figure salaries, and that's hard to accept in a time when we're repetitively looking for cuts, and I just feel that we have well-qualified people in our Department of Education and well-qualified people on that State Board of Education, and they can roll up their sleeves and get things organized and do it without that position, but no disrespect to the presentation of the letter here today.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond real quickly to Senator Duxer? We, too, are very concerned about that exponential growth. The footnote she passed last year required funding at an existing position from within the Department of Education, so it didn't add one. It actually, you achieved some of the efficiency I think Representative Larson was seeking. This was funding and a position that came out of existing resources.
Representative Larson.
But to that point, Mr. Chairman, that's what we're not doing with this request. We funded that last time within the Department of Education, and we're requesting additional funding. No?
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I apologize for not making that clear. No, the governor, the governor's request is that you carry forward the provisions of the footnote from last year.
Mr. Chairman, so we're going to require the Department of Education to fund it as we did last year in the footnote.
that is the governor's recommendation.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Mary Kay, one of the issues that we had with the coordinator is you're paying this – basically, this is a retired superintendent or principal, and they're coming in at a $100,000 a year salary. They spend 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the year down here lobbying us on behalf of the Board of Education as opposed to being a quote-unquote coordinator. And they, that person kind of turns into I think they use them almost as an expert or a person who educates them on the issues rather than being a coordinator. And so I'm just curious about why you need someone of that caliber who, you know, are they hiring a lobbyist and someone who will advocate for them in front of, on their behalf in front of us and other entities, or are we trying to have a coordinator who's assisting them perform their function, which is a whole different thing, and it's certainly not a $100,000 a year position.
Mr. Chairman, that's a tough question for me to answer, given the governor's somewhat. State Board of Education is, like all the boards and commissions, once appointed, they operate independently of his interference. But so I would like to make sure that if you want further information, we can make State Board of Education members available to you. Your point, however, about the difference between lobbying and coordinating is well taken. It was a source of discussion in the last session. And there are different personalities that come and go in this process. The State Board of Education has hired a new individual who has a somewhat different approach to the position, and I have not myself sensed that he has been doing that same kind of work that the previous person did.
Mr. Kocher.
The current liaison is a retired assistant superintendent who retired. Is he collecting – do you know if he is collecting retirement pension as well as his current pay? You don't know. The going back to Representative Summers' question or issue that he brought up, does the governor have a position in terms of the idea of getting rid of the liaison and replacing it with a coordinator instead?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, he does not.
Because I know that the superintendent was actually actively lobbied against the liaison position.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I have had my own personal conversations with the superintendent. She was aware of this recommendation. She was aware when the governor put it into his budget. Her comment to me was that they would not actively oppose this proposal.
Okay. I think we kind of all know the ground rules for this one, too. So if there are not any other questions, let's move to the next letter.
Mr. Chairman, the next letter is actually letter two, and it's on local governments. It's the governor's request for $5 million for emergency grant funding, which is used on an application basis when local governments have an emergency situation like maybe a ruptured sewer pipe. I just wanted to maybe give this background to the committee, and that is that the mineral grant program came into existence in 1977. It's codified in Wyoming Statute 94604. The program, when it was put into place by the legislature, was to help mitigate the impact of mineral development across the state and particularly on local governments as they had to deal with that without any real resource to do so. The mineral royalty grant program actually is funded through three different distributions of revenue. It's under the cap severance tax of $3.66 million per year. It's under the cap federal mineral royalties of $7.43 million per year and about $5.6 million of coal lease bonus payments, which total about $16.7 million per fiscal year and $33 million over the course of the biennium. What happened is last year the legislature adopted language that directed the coal lease bonus funds in fiscal year 2018 into the school capital construction account. And that's actually a bit complicated. It was a result of to address federal sequestration. But the other issue is that there are not anticipated to be any coal lease bonus payments this biennium. So in essence, this also is not a case where the governor would be recommending new funding. He's recognizing that there's a gap in the program caused by that redirection of those coal lease bonus payments of about $5 million. The program is an important resource to local communities when they get into a situation where they have an emergency that they don't otherwise have funding for, could not have been anticipated. And so the request is actually to restore, in essence, the coal lease bonus monies that went to the school capital construction account to make the program whole so that money remains available as communities might experience these kinds of issues and need to come forward and ask for help.
Questions from the body? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Gray, so thank you for that background. Could you give us some examples of what this money was used for in the last biennium and how much was reverted?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I can find specific examples for you, Representative, but I know that, so for example, and I'm praying I can remember all the names of the communities, most of these folks, they're doing a new sewer system over in Pine Haven near Gillette, and they had some ruptures and some things that they didn't anticipate when they began to do the work that they had planned to do, and so they needed to come forward and get some additional help on that. So that was a ruptured sewer pipe issue. There was another community that actually had some contamination in their water, and they needed to do some emergency work to actually redo their well. And I can get those all come before the State Lands and Investments Boards as requests are actually as those requests are made by communities for that kind of assistance. And so I can actually get you a complete list of those projects and be happy to do so.
So go ahead, Representative Larson.
Mr. Gray, do you know what the balance of that fund is right now?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, no, I don't, but I can also get you that.
And I guess the reason is I was just wondering if you were anticipating a shortage that would require the $5 million, are we running short on that or not, if you could let us know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I think maybe Alex has the number.
And Alex, can you just kind of give us a brief history of that emergency grant funding and how we funded it in the past and how much it received typically over time and the expenditures for it?
Mr. Chairman, Alex Keene, the program is funded through these three sources, through severance tax, federal mineral royalties, and coal lease bonus. That funding then goes into an account for the mineral royalty grant program. The appropriations committee then through Office of State Lands budget actually makes the appropriation for the mineral royalty grant program. The issue here is there's the appropriation to SLIB to provide these grants to local governments in an amount of $33.4 million.
Okay.
The revenue no longer matches that. So the appropriated side has remained, but the revenue, the coal lease bonus stream that would go into that program will be short by more than $5 million. The request is simply to restore that in this biennium. It's a issue going forward into 1920. The program, to the best of my knowledge, they grant out every dollar that's in the program. Occasionally, those grants are some of the money is returned if the user of the grant is able to come in under the budgeted amount. And so money can revert that way. but typically all of those dollars are sent out through grants. The governor would like to direct this $5 million for only emergency situations.
So then once again, Alex, your understanding is that the $33 million that was appropriated wasn't a full 33, and how much of that balance has been expended for emergency situations up through this point in time?
Mr. Chairman, I would have to get you an exact number on that. My understanding of how the program works is they divide it out so that at quarterly meetings they receive requests for that funding but do not spend at a rate faster than a quarterly distribution per fiscal year.
So in essence, you take the $33 million, you break it up through the biennium, and do equal disbursements bearing on who's first in line based upon need. Okay. Further questions? Representative Larson.
Alex, so that $33 million, excuse me, that $33 million we're referring to, is that statutorily in place?
Mr. Chairman, it is.
Would you mind giving me that reference?
I'd be happy to. Yeah. I will send it to you.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, can I clarify that question?
Sure.
Are you talking about the distribution of funds into the account or the actual program reference?
The reference that indicates the amount that is to be directed to the account.
Okay.
Thanks.
Further questions? So, Alex, so over the past 15 months or part of this biennium, have they still been giving out the equivalent as if they had $33 million, or as soon as the budget cuts came in, did they reduce it, knowing that their funding balance may be lower?
Mr. Chairman, they reduced it.
So if we give $5 million, that means you can kind of prop it back up.
Sure. So it'd be over the course of 8 quarters, because the full biennium. Yeah. So it'd be, you know, maybe in the next quarter that they would have an additional $500,000 for these programs, for these. But let me go back to a point that Alex made, that the governor's intent would be to reserve this for emergencies, because traditionally they have more requests than they have funding for anyway. They spend the full $33 million, and the demand for the money exceeds the money available. And so the intent here would be to reserve this for a true disastrous sort of a situation that wouldn't otherwise be covered.
Representative Larson.
So, Carrie Jo, to that point, what have you used traditionally for emergency money if you award the full amount each year?
So as these requests come through in the last quarter of the biennium, as the SLIB looks at that, they're always careful to allocate the money so that there is always that backstop for a situation that comes up that can otherwise be covered.
Further questions? Okay. We appreciate it, Alex. As always, if you can get us a list of the what's been funded over the last several, you know, 3 or 4 years, I think that we would be interested to know that.
Mr. Chairman, we'll get you a list of the expenditure and also the balance in the account today, so
great.
That you're aware
and,
of
yeah.
that. Okay.
Does anyone want any other information, like in terms of what's coming down the pipeline and what's there?
Did you ask for a history of how it's been spent? Okay.
All right. We got one more letter left, I believe. Is that going to be you, Alex?
Mr. Chairman, it is. The final letter is regarding the contingent appropriations from the LSRA. I think it's important to understand the background on this. The 15-16 biennium ended with a revenue miss of about $148 million. And So in making up that miss in revenue, the $104.2 million that was sitting in the budget reserve, that statutory reserve amount that would otherwise carry over, was expended to cover that a portion of that shortfall. So as we move into the 17-18 biennium, there is no carryover in the budget reserve account, which is different than prior bienniums. Last session, the legislature passed Senate File 68, the Budget Shortfalls Measures Bill. In that bill, it provides the governor the opportunity to make a recommendation for a contingent appropriation. Prior to this bill being passed, there was a Section 300 in budget bills, which identified if Craig were to meet and write down projected revenue by $150 million, there would be a transfer of $150 million from the LSRA to cover that revenue change. This bill changed that conversation to proactively put in place a contingent appropriation or contemplate putting in a contingent appropriation in case of a change in revenue projection. What the governor is asking for in this letter is that you refill the statutory reserve amount, the $104.55 million, but use it as a contingent appropriation in case of revenues not matching projection. Embedded in that.
No, go ahead.
Embedded in that, the governor's identified two issues, which may come up, which there is not a known amount or a guarantee that the expenditures would be made, but would like to identify funding for those purposes. The first being Title 25. I think everyone on this committee is aware of the Title 25 issue. When the governor put this budget together, the evaluation of the Title 25 program would identified a potential $21 million shortfall as expenditures compare to the actual budgeted amount in the Department of Health's budget. So the governor has asked for $21 million of contingent appropriation to cover those costs. I believe the latest range on Title 25 overruns is between $8 million and $15 million, but I believe the Department of Health can follow up on that specific issue. The other would be a catastrophic failure at the prison. The letter requests a $19.2 million contingent appropriation for this purpose. And that's based on the one fiscal year's need to, in case of that catastrophic failure.
And what that represents is the cost of housing all inmates at one other location for 1 year, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alex, that projection, I want to make sure that I understood that projection number you had for Title 25. Is that what your understanding the Department of Health's projections is for the current year we're in, or is it for the next year?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that is their data through this point in the fiscal year and then forecasting that out for the remainder of the biennium. There's an appropriation in their budget for $4 million. Then you take the projected burn rate to this point and then forecast that forward for the remainder of the biennium.
And Mr. Chairman, in their budget, that $4 million was for the biennium or was it annual?
Mr. Chairman, it's for the biennium.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I could,
please.
The Department of Health provided an update on the Title 25 expenditures. I think it was submitted possibly yesterday or Friday. So you have updated information on each county and the demands on that account. I would just follow up Alex's point by noting this is really a perfect candidate for a contingent appropriation because it has become fairly fluid. It moves up and down. For example, one county which had been going at a fairly fast pace in terms of exceeding the last year's demand, has dropped down. Another county is way up. So it is a situation the Department of Health monitors daily.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Larson.
Did Mary Kay, did you say we received that document, or we did?
Mr. Chairman, you did. I'll have to I'm not sure how your system works, but we can get you extras, too, if you need them.
I have not seen the most recent data, but we all know what the data is. And it's really three counties, primarily. And that's a problem that needs to be fixed. And so we're working on that from various avenues. So. But we understand the problem. Senator Landon.
Did I see you look over in my direction? Why did you look at my direction?
Oh, I didn't tell you ask for. I can.
Don't you dare look over there.
Anything else, Alex, or Don?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the document they're referring to is handout number 67 from the Department of Health. It was submitted in December, actually.
Okay. Yeah, so we've got that one. And we'll follow up. We've got the director here shortly, and we'll confirm those numbers and what's going on with it. So, well, once again, we fully understand the need and the issues for it. So, I think. Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much. Committee, we're going to take. Let's take about a quick 5-minute break before we go on to the next.
Mr. Chairman, good morning. Morning to the committee again. I'm Steve True, the director at the Livestock Board, and with me again is our accounting analyst, Enright. Also in the room is one of our board members, Mark Isley. I would ask you to proceed on, Mr. Chairman, with whatever questions you have, what you have brought us back to elaborate upon. Mr. Chairman, one thing I would note, we did provide LSO a handout regarding Senator Driscoll's question on law enforcement. I don't know if you have that in front of you yet, but we're prepared to answer any questions you might have about that if you have time or interest in going that way this morning, too. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Director True, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll probably go off that line at least to start with just a little as looking at your law enforcement in particular and the numbers of cases. Can you kind of elaborate who handles these cases, if it's inspectors doing it or this is all law enforcement, and kind of the procedures and how they go about it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, everything on that bar chart is generated through our investigators' incident reports. Those are all cases that they handle. In some cases, they will involve brand inspector if identification of the owner of livestock is necessary, or they work hand-in-hand on a lot of animal welfare cases. But those are cases that our investigators have responded to in that time period of January 1, 2016, January 1, 2017.
Mr. Chairman, a little bit of follow-up. Are on a cost-effective basis, like on animal cruelty, missing livestock, would these not be better handled with brand inspectors often?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I guess the way I would put animal welfare cases, in my understanding of the statute, is that those are mostly peace officer generated. Our inspectors work in them a lot as eyes. Our four investigators, I apprised you of their dispersion the other day. Each one covers about six counties. A lot of times they use brand inspectors as help for immediate eyes on a report of a starving or a crippled animal. But it's still, those brand inspectors carry no weight as far as being able to cite or seize on their own. So that's where that reverts back to our investigators and animal health professionals generally to work that angle. Missing livestock, the way we work that in the livestock board is every report is run through an investigator. Sometimes missing reports can come into us strictly straight from the producer to the office. They can come through a brand inspector. They could come through you, for instance, as a representative of your area. But each of those cases is then validated by an investigator. They make contact with that reporting party, get their initial interviews done, and as you'll note in the narrative, that's kind of how we rate those theft and missing cases, depending on the evidence or information gained on the initial contact. And those cases can rotate back in and out of the missing theft categories depending on information gained. You know, if there's a suspect offered, then that's likely to be a theft case. And if that person is cleared and the evidence, whatever physical evidence is, becomes cleared up, then that may revert to be a missing livestock case.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, how many prosecutions have we had on theft, and how many cite and seize have we had on welfare in the last couple of years?
This past year, Mr. Chairman, we've had one theft prosecution. It is in the court process at this time. There has been a plea reached, but sentencing has not been finished, so I won't comment on the plea agreement. Other than to say it has gone our way. And on a animal welfare, those cases vary because in some cases a local agency may initiate that. And then help ask us for our involvement. An example would be a year ago, Natrona County seized 34 horses on a welfare case. And in conjunction with our officers, we took those animals into our care, and then the owner proved up ownership on the ones they could, reached a plea agreement in their court, but we were still forced to care for and rehabilitate 11 animals that we then sold to new private owners.
Mr. Chairman, back to how many citations did we issue on welfare last year?
I'll have to get those numbers for you, Senator. Off the top of my head, because some of those cites are issued by us, some of them by the local agency that we're, where we work as an agency assist. So I could get you ours, but going statewide, I'd have to reach out to all the sheriffs.
Just really a rough idea of yours.
I would say neighborhood of 10.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chairman, if I could elaborate just a little, you'll note in the narrative of those cases that we got the call on, those animal welfare cases, we were the initial call. And in those cases, many times that call is with a drive-by, that the case is closed. We have one of my favorite examples is LCCC in the springtime here in Cheyenne. When they bring their bucking horses in and you get a nice sunny day, we'll get two or three calls a week about dead and dying horses. And we can administer some emergency one-honk CPR and resuscitate most of those animals. So we get, but each of those is a case because we respond to every call we get. So I would like to just say that the public is interested in animal welfare, and we are as well, and we respond to every call we get.
Representative Somers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So, Director, a couple of scenarios we're looking at, and I'm sure you've heard these, is one is more or less the elimination of the law enforcement, move half the dollars of brand inspection off general fund back to fee. The other one would be to move all of brand inspection off general fund back to fee. If we did the law enforcement piece, one, we would maybe try to move somebody to DCI to cover a statewide animal law enforcement type position. So my question on the animal cruelty issue is, what on animal welfare are you mandated in statute to do, and how would you be impacted by any of those moves to do what you are required to do by statute? So, and if you don't know that, you can get me that information.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, there's a couple of different places in the statute that animal cruelty or crimes against livestock are recorded. I would have to look at that to specify the different status of officer in those statutes. That would be my answer to that question. If you could restate your other two questions, I'd appreciate it so I answer the right ones.
Mr. Chairman, that was my main question, but we're looking at kind of two scenarios, and one I would be interested in your agency's feedback on, which is two very poor scenarios, but I would be interested in your feedback on those scenarios, one which is the elimination of the law enforcement with shifting half of the brand funds back off general fund, and the other being shifting the entire brand program off general fund and the law enforcement section remains intact.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, you're offering me an either or.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not offering you either or. I'm offering you.
You'd like me to respond in either or.
I'm offering you comments on both options. Let's put
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, as far as the option of moving law enforcement, my response would be, my initial response would be, I would never speak for the outstanding individuals who are the local agencies in the state. Other than to say at our joint agricultural meeting last spring in Torrington, two sheriffs came and represented, their thoughts to two highly agricultural and livestock related counties, their thoughts and the interplay between them and our investigators. and their needs. And I would, that would be as far as I would go to that, but I'm sure I can supply some better information from those gentlemen on their ramifications of that move. As far as us, because our brand inspectors do not carry that ability to cite for animal cruelty, for a brand violation, for a health violation, and our officers wrote over 30 citations on those categories last year, enforcing the import rules and brand violations, and the brand inspectors cannot do that, and I don't know where that workload would shift in that sort of a move. So I think that one would be, without offering opinion, which is not my job. My job is to execute the policy I'm given. I would say that most agencies in the state treat our four off investigators as the experts in livestock law and as a backstop and as that phone call. I would say that through the outreach of the last year and the outstanding cooperations from the sheriffs, highway patrol, our officers are getting a myriad of 2 a.m. calls, and those gentlemen are making the livestock stops as well. And then if they're not sure of what the paperwork is or the story they're getting, they have not been bashful about reaching out to our gentlemen for the information and how to proceed. As far as removing that appropriation or moving that from our agency and then leaving us with half of our brand inspective in funding, I don't know. Are you referring to a fee increase within that?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So if we moved half the dollars, I believe your testimony the last time is if that entire brand program were to be, brand inspection program was to be moved off general fund, that it would require a 50% increase in brand inspection fees. So I'm assuming then that half would be a 25%. And I also believe, I recollect from my time on the board, that you have a 20%, you have the ability to move fees 20% yearly currently in statute. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, that is correct. We, in statute, we, the board can raise the fees up to 20% one time in a fiscal year through the rulemaking process. My testimony or my intent of my testimony was a minimum of 50%, because in that same statute that refers to the board's ability to raise fees, where we adopt a budget and present that to the Joint Ag Committee, within that budget we are to keep a reserve of 1 year's operating. So that being said, a one-time 20% raise of the fiscal of the fees of brand inspection, which would only be brand inspection fees, country and sale barn, and our ability, our surcharge, our trip charge, the only places we can raise in brand inspection, and raising the fees in the brand recording. And I would offer 2 points of information there. And if I get off track, please ask me clarifying questions. Our brand recording revenue comes in once per biennium. Every other year we have a recording. So the second year of the biennium, there is no fees on that side other than the issuance of new brands or transfers or that sort of thing. So the bulk of those funds come in the first year. As in this year, we are in a renewal, which by March 2nd, we will have collected all those renewal fees. The second point of information with that would be in 2009, when the fees for recording were raised from $120 to $300, there was a 10% drop in participation in the renewal. And I think as we go forward with the level the fees are at now and the I can't quote you a number, but I would say a majority of our brands are heirloom brands rather than livestock use brands, I think that participation rate would see a commensurate drop with another raise. So that's a hard number to guess. But at this point, if we were to raise them. And I would like to thank our accounting analyst for running a quick scenario for us here. If we raise those fees that 20%, that would gain us $1.2 million on an average year, which doesn't meet half of the general fund. It'd be, the general fund at this point would be a little over 1.33. So we would still see a shortfall, which over time would cause us an issue probably meeting that statutory minimum. And part of that reason is this is our biggest renewal this year. The next four will be just roughly 50% the size of this one. So there's that much revenue reduction in the next two bienniums. So that would be my best estimate today at that number. As we spoke the other day at the hearing, inspection fees are hard to estimate due to all the vagaries that affect that market. So we're projecting those on fairly conservative average numbers over the last three or four bienniums. A full reduction of our general fund would take that minimum of a 50% raise. And I would only offer a minimum because as we reduce the general fund, then our statutory obligation to maintain that operating fund increases at the same rate. So now we have that much more liability of the expenditure of our revised budget that has to be made out of that earmarked fund. So not only does our budget, our carryover amount have to increase, but so does our expenditure commensurately. Very few, the earmarked fund and the brand inspection program is 85% brand inspectors, salaries and benefits, about 10% mileage and other would catch that other 5%. So there's not much give there. We would have to make up everything that the general fund applies to that unit. The producers would have to make it up through fee increases.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chu, so the information you give us is really quite helpful, and I want to make sure that I understand it correctly. When you point out that your inspectors are tasked, when you refer to investigators, I'm taking that to be your law enforcement officers.
Sir. Yes, sir.
And so there's 391 calls. That calculates to 1.07 total calls to be shared between those total investigators per day, per year. And so we've got, I'm sure as I look through those at the types that after a call is made, then there's some follow-ups and there's some, you know, it's not just a one-time deal. I just want to make sure that I'm seeing those numbers right. Does that look about right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I guess you could divide it out that way. But as I pointed out, the four officers are dispersed and each has six counties. So that one call may require traversing five of those counties to get to the call. And each call requires some investigation. And of course, they're law enforcement. There are some record keeping. There's some case reporting to be done. So, that may be the way that averages out. Typically, I would say that the winter is an animal welfare time. And because of folks that, maybe can't afford to feed the horse they've got in the backyard or shortage of forage, and the summer, spring and fall are the heaviest reporting of the missing livestock. So our folks are running their areas hard, and those cases all take a lot of time.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And having served on the board, I also know that the board has flexibility in what they ultimately determine to charge, you know, as for brand inspection. In other words, your brand laws are, you have statutes that are govern your brand laws, and you probably also have regulations that allow you flexibility within those statutes. So I would assume that any board that was facing a cut like that would have to examine some of those regulations that exist in brand as well, right?
Mr. Chairman or Representative, are you referring to the regulations on fees or just brand regulations in general?
Brand regulations in general.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the board has that capability to look at that. And with these type of cuts, there would be some curtailment of service. And at this time, I couldn't estimate what that would be, but there would be some.
And so, Director True, just to kind of close these things out a little bit, I think you understand where our predicament is. We obviously have kind of put you in a hot box because this is all on short notice for you and the notice component of it. And we apologize for that, and we apologize to the livestock industry. But on a concept basis, it appears, I think, to most of us or generally that the brand inspectors ought to be funded by your consumers and the livestock growers and not necessarily general fund dollars. So just as on a whole, it ought to be a self-supportive industry like other industries. We want to get you there in a reasonable fashion, and we want to do it in a way that that's fair and open to you and to the livestock producers and as best as we can. So we're going to work with this, and we'll whatever we come up with in the next as we mark up in the next few days, it won't be the end all to anything, it may be a temporary fix between now and next biennium when your board can get together and come up with some better ideas than we have on how to get there and how to spread the costs and do the right thing. And we're always receptive to that. Like I said, this won't be the end all, but I think there's a strong momentum here to do something to get it off general fund. And if you have any concepts or ideas that you can shoot us in the next day or two on it, and through the honestly through the interim on what we do, and if you think there's better ways to do it, our ears are wide open, and we'd love to work with you. So thanks for your patience. Thanks for putting up with us, and all of a sudden having to sit in front of us and saying, "Oh my goodness, what the hell are you guys doing?" With that, are there any further questions for the livestock board? Do we have any public comment? Anyone that want to just please come forward and be happy to hear from you.
Do I need a mic?
Yeah, we're going live, so.
You probably know how to turn it on. I don't. I couldn't turn this one on the other day.
Until you get the light on. Thanks. And for the record, just identify yourself so we know who's.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ken Hamilton, and I work with the Wyoming Farm Bureau Federation. But I would like to maybe go back. There was a task force that was appointed by Governor Freudenthal back in, I think, 2006 or something in that area, because at the time the Livestock Board's finances were not doing well. And one of the things, and I served on that task force, but one of the things that we looked at were those activities that the brand inspectors do that fall outside of that brand inspection duty. And at that time, that's where the general fund appropriation came to be for the brand inspectors. And I don't know, there's some question about just exactly how much that was, but at that time, that committee settled on approximately 35% of those brand inspectors' time was spent on things outside of the brand inspection. And I think at that time, the concept was that it was perhaps not fair that the livestock industry be tasked with funding those activities that the brand inspectors participated in that were outside of those brand inspection duties. Now, I think Director True mentioned some of those things like responding to the animal welfare issues, assisting in animal health things. Those are those kind of activities at the time that the committee felt were not part of the brand inspection program. When the patrolman calls the brand inspector at 2 o'clock in the morning and says, we've got livestock out on the road. Can you come help us with that? Those kinds of things. So I just wanted to bring that, out as part of this discussion and the reason we got where we were, today. And Mr. Chairman, unless there's any question, that's all I really have.
I appreciate it. Any other,
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Senator Duxner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstader, you know, the I don't think that our livestock producers are particularly fond of any idea, any concepts of raising fees to the level that they are perhaps looking at here. And I think there would be some pressure on the livestock board to maybe look at restricting those duties of the brand inspectors back to just those inspection things. So I don't know whether that would work. I doubt very seriously that our brand inspector, if he got called up in the middle of the night to help out with livestock, would turn that down, Senator. And I'm certainly not going to answer to any of those kinds of things. But I think the issue comes down to fairness of, well, if the livestock industry is going to be asked to support those other non brand inspection things, then I think that there would be some concern in our members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim McGagnon with the Wyoming Stock Growers Association, and I think Mr. Hamilton provided some very good background. I'd like to go back for a moment, Mr. Chairman, to your final comments, which I thought were very appropriate. And you know, we realize the burden that we as producers have to assume. And in these times, we understand the general fund issues. I think what I would ask from this committee and from the legislature is that, given an opportunity for the livestock board and staff, the industry, the Joint Ag Committee who's engaged in this, and certainly welcome input from this committee, to sit down and work our way through this, I think we can look at some combinations of efficiencies and absorbing some increases in brand inspection, perhaps, as necessary, that can provide the answers that you're looking for. What I would urge that not to do is to do something drastic at this point that doesn't allow a reversal, and one of those would be the elimination of the law enforcement program, which I believe is critical to our industry, to have those officers, even though there are only four of them, who understand what the rules are that apply to livestock and animal care and everything, and make a real difference just by their presence out there, which can't be measured strictly in terms of how many citations they issue or how many successful prosecutions there are. So what I think makes sense to us as industry is to say, knowing what the future holds, give the industry and the board and others the opportunity over the interim period to sit down and look at these programs. There may be some things that we're doing that under the current circumstances we don't need to do. One of the real challenges we face is that livestock numbers in the state are down, partly as a result of drought and other factors, which means less revenue. But the miles that a brand inspector has to travel, and, you know, he used to drive to a location to expect 300 head, he may be driving to that location in recent years to expect 200 head. Well, the need for him to be there and be there at that time, since inspections are related to sales and shipping of livestock, does not decrease. So we need to look, I think, at how we can build some efficiencies into that whole program, but we need a little time to do that with your tolerance and your encouragement, frankly. So, Chairman, thank you. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you, Jim, for those thoughts. So even back, I guess, 10 years ago, I started on the livestock board. I was on there for 6 years. The livestock investigator program was mired in controversy then, and it has got better recently. But still, I would say that there's and I'm asking you this. Out in the country, I see less support for that program in my area than any other program that exists in the Livestock Board. Can you speak to the support you see for that program around the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, certainly I want to agree with the portrayal that you have made. And frankly, 6 years ago, I was one of those who was saying if we cannot improve the law enforcement program, we need to get rid of it. I think that program has been turned around. I'm not going to say it's perfect, that there isn't room for additional improvement, but the difference that it's made, the availability of those law enforcement officers, to be very honest with you, just this past summer, the one prosecution that was referred to by the director took place for some livestock. They weren't my livestock, but they were stolen off of my ranch, belonging to someone else. And 5 or 6 years ago, I doubt that that would have been done successfully. I think it is now. So what I hear from people I talk to around the state is those law enforcement officers are not the people that they interact with every day. They interact with their brand inspectors. But most of the people that I visited with feel that the reason, compared to some other places, we seem to have a lower rate of livestock theft in the state is because of the sense that those people are out there. Today it's so easy with a gooseneck trailer and a couple of panels or a good dog to come in and steal some livestock. And it's virtually impossible. Brand inspectors, county sheriffs, law enforcement officers, to be there in those places to always catch those things. So we rely very heavily on the sense, building a sense among those people who would be inclined to steal livestock, that I'm putting myself at risk by doing it. And the sense I get from the people I talk with around the state, for the most part, is that the presence of those law enforcement officers, the fact that they can be called on, that people know they're out there, even though they're covering large areas, is seen as a detriment to greater levels of livestock theft in the state.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jim, appreciate your comments. Anyone else would like to comment? Can you grab him the mic and make sure the buttons are on? Or move the chair. That works. Welcome, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Mike Hayes. I'm representing the Wyoming Sheriffs and Chiefs Association. We're also in support of the Wyoming Livestock Enforcement Program for a number of the reasons that Mr. McGagnon has already stated. The program has improved the last 3 years that I personally know of, and has greatly improved. The law enforcement officers, county sheriffs and local law enforcement officers in the state of Wyoming have changed drastically over the last 15, 20 years. Prior to that time, a good portion of those officers came from farms, ranches, been around livestock for most of their lives. That isn't the case anymore. The Livestock Board investigators are the experts, and the rest of the law enforcement agencies in the state rely on them in that capacity. We're always willing to help them, and they come around and help the rest of the county sheriffs whenever we have a problem with livestock, missing livestock.
Further questions? Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And there was someone else in the back. Yeah. Please come up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Amy Hendrickson. I'm the executive director of the Wyoming Wool Growers Association. And I would like to echo Mr. McGagnon's comments. Our concerns with this. Is the animal welfare aspect, that's one area. About 2 years ago, we had a video that was released by the PETA, and it portrayed a shearing as a very cruel practice. And it, the when they came to Wyoming, PETA came to Wyoming at the time. Ag Director Miyamoto was acting at the Livestock Board, and they asked him to look at the video, the original video, the one that had been out in the public, that showed some very awful looking things that were, some of which was proven later not to be true. But asked him to investigate. The tape that they left behind, however, was not the same as what that tape that was released to the public was. But at least we had people with an understanding of livestock practices, of animal husbandry, what normal shearing looks like, that were able to look at those depictions and determine, as they did later, that it was actually what they saw on the tape that was left behind by PETA that was represented producers in Wyoming, shearing in Wyoming, that it was, that nothing was outside of normal husbandry practices. If we had not had the livestock investigation, in law enforcement, it is our concern as to who would have been the one to review that tape and make those determinations. Would it have been someone who had a good background in livestock care? So that's one of our concerns. The other has to do with if you do take it out away from the livestock board, who then is going to be responsible for doing those investigations? And for us, it was very important there. So with that, I'll stand for any questions or sit for any questions.
Well, if they don't like shearing, there's a few other things we do that they really won't like.
Yeah.
Thanks for your comments.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to say that in that process, they named, of all the places they went, one of the places they went to was the property was owned by that then current chairman of the Livestock Board, and they named her in the tape. So it's a big deal. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right,
Chairman.
Thank you. Further comments? Please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, committee, Mark Isley, livestock producer here in Laramie County. I also will disclose that I'm also one of the newer members of the Wyoming Livestock Board. I'd like to wear the hat of the livestock producer first. I live on the I-80 corridor and have seen instances where law enforcement, livestock board law enforcement, has been enormous help because we have multiple truck wrecks. They're the first ones that Highway Patrol refer to, and many times they're stuck doing some of the dirtiest of jobs. And I've seen where they've had to go onto a truck and euthanize 25, 30 head of livestock. Really difficult thing. They understand the situation. Also, in this tri-state area, we are subject to quite a bit of livestock theft. With Nebraska and Kansas not far away, a quick trailer load to an area that has unregulated brand laws or unenforced brand laws, as both Nebraska and Kansas do, a producer can take a real hit overnight with a trailer load of valuable livestock. My livestock board hat, I'd like to touch on a couple of things that Director True didn't really mention. If he did earlier, I may have missed the testimony at another meeting. He personally went out and met with all 23 sheriffs in the state of Wyoming, all county sheriffs, and started a very good dialogue with them in that regard. He also is a direct contact with Wyoming Highway Patrol, and we've tried to initiate some programs, some interactions, some education, some those kind of things, so that our law enforcement guys can teach the patrolmen, who are no longer county sheriffs or rural deputies. They've spent time. They've come out of the military. They've worked for city police department. They're looking on how to stop trucks, what the right questions are to ask, whereas before they were intimidated, and there were, with the health concerns and the marketing and the huge fall run, in particular with livestock that happens, without that enforcement, the livestock industry is at a real disadvantage. On top of that, we have suffered a 50% decline in our prices in the last 2 years. We feel the pain in the state of Wyoming. So I'm there with you in that regard. Mr. Chairman, committee, that's all I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Further testimony? Going once, going twice. Any further questions? Okay. I think that'll...
You think we could fit in DFS
between now and 10?
I think... Actually, you know, by the time we go through introductions and all that kind of stuff, I think we could probably run it through. Because we're not—I don't think we have a whole lot of time to go with the DFS. Let's try to rock it and see how far we get. You ready? Is that okay with you?
No. Yeah. Want to go into session?
Oh, you do?
We're supposed to go into session.
Oh well, okay. If you want to,
I was kidding.
Okay, I thought you were telling the truth.
No.
We don't need to do handshakes every day.
Thanks.
Miss the Pledge of Allegiance. What
I'll
the hell?
Back.
No. If you want to come, bring him back at noon, that's fine.
We don't handshake.
Fire away. Please proceed, Steve.
Yeah.
Director Corsi?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. Steve Corsi, Department of Family Services Director. This is Nick Beard, CFO to the department to my left. Committee, we have provided you with a document. I hope that you have that in front of you, or at least that you have access to that. It should start with this page, which says Child Support Revenue and Enhancement Account. So during our original testimony on December 14th, I believe it was, we had provided you with what we called a fund description document, and some questions came up from committee members. And what we've done here is provided you an expanded amount of knowledge on this account so that you would understand that account better. Then moving to page 2. Oh, I'm sorry. And on the back of that sheet, if yours is two-sided as mine is.
One-sided.
Oh, yours is one-sided. So it would be the next sheet, I would guess, should be a schematic that looks something like this, that shows how the money comes into that account and how the money goes out of that account. We wanted you to understand that as well. We didn't want there to be any question that DFS may be kind of hiding funds, because we're certainly not. What we do want to do is assure the committee through these documents that we're talking about today that the DFS budget is as transparent as there is a budget, I believe, in state government, and we're happy to make it. We want it to be that way. We want you to understand where every dollar's at.
So Director, I think what we would like to know and have a comfort zone with is that the management of those funds and the staffing of your office is getting back up to speed, if you will, and so that we're not going to be coming in and having another year's worth of funds that haven't been redirected and repaid back, and so that we're just caught up. And that's really where we're coming from.
And Mr. Chairman, I think I absolutely believe that the answer to that is yes. And I'd like to just make a quick comment about that. One of the difficulties that we experienced in the department a couple of years ago was that 50 plus years of institutional knowledge left the department when Paul Yaksik retired. He had been there for 18 years, his second in command in our financial services unit, moved over to the Department of Health. He had been there for a number of years. And then another person left. So the top three folks in our financial services with all that institutional knowledge who knew where all of the cubby holes were, where the money was at, left at the same time. And we've been playing a little bit of catch up. We believe that we very much have a handle on that now. We believe that our current budget reflects the handle on that and that it's only going to get better. And you're going to see an amazing budget going forward for this next biennium.
Well, hopefully that'll happen with this committee as well. So we'll catch up and keep running.
So this document, Mr. Chairman, is really an effort to answer the committee's questions and provide additional clarification. As I mentioned, there's one document here that you don't have that we're going to provide for you. We worked collaboratively. Well, I guess that's up to Kevin Hibbert to decide whether it was collaborative. I think it was. But we worked collaboratively with the budget office probably a couple of months ago. We also worked with the Department of Health. Wanted some outside objective perspective on our budget. The budget office and health's fiscal people took a look, and they all said, yep, we understand why you did what you did. We understand the methodology. We have a few recommendations. And they made a few recommendations, and those were good recommendations. A couple of those, one was to use what's called a chart of accounts over at the state auditor's office that would help us track grants better. That's a good recommendation. We'll figure out how to do that. The other two were along similar lines. Nick and his staff have also done an internal review, and we have a document that I'd like to provide, we'd like to provide the committee that should give you some additional clarification.
And you've got some comments here on the crisis beds. Any update on that, or is that just information you're providing?
This was, Mr. Chairman, in reference to Representative Greer's question, I believe, about what if we were to have two rates, a rate for occupied beds versus a rate for unoccupied beds, what might that look like and what might result from that? And actually, Nick developed this, so if it's okay with the committee.
Fire away, Nick.
Mr. Chairman, there are a few concerns with the double rate issue, and those are outlined in this as well. There is a proposal here to change to a two-rate system. It would be $141 per bed per day for filled beds and $45 per bed per day for unfilled beds. It would save $1.3 million in state general fund. The big concerns are whether TANF would even allow this. And we've already gotten really close to our capacity on TANF spending. We're awarded $37 million, I believe. We're about at $36.5 million on our TANF authorized in our budget currently.
So how do we know that the answer to that question between now and Friday?
Mr. Chairman, we can talk to our feds about it. There are some concerns about doing that.
Yeah.
What's that?
You have your own personal feds.
our TANF.
So
feds.
You know, and part of the drill here would be not only to talk to the feds, but if other states have a dual rate, the feds may not like it, but they might put up with it. And so I think you need to make an inquiry more than just to
Mr. Chairman.
You can ask a federal agency person who has been instructed, if they ask this is how you're supposed to answer it. This is what you can, yeah. what we can really do.
Mr. Chairman, part of the concern with visiting with the feds about this was a state of Wyoming legislature idea. The crisis bed evolution was done by the state of Wyoming's legislature.
So we're kind of an outlier, you mean?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And could cause other concerns with using TANF dollars. We believe that we can argue the question, if the feds were to ask us about why we're using TANF dollars for this, we don't want to spark that question.
Sure.
We believe, Mr. Chairman, that we could defend this well. We would prefer not to highlight it at the same time.
That makes sense. And Representative Larson, I'd like you to kind of spearhead just the concept of whether or not if the rates are accurate and if this is something that we ought to pursue in our market. Because I think that you'll have a kind of a good handle on the TANF concepts. So, anything further?
Mr. Chairman, if there are no additional questions, well, I guess I should say we provided for Representative Summers and the committee, we provided some information, data on Power SASFA. You had requested those numbers, sir. And then I don't recall who off the top of my head who asked about prevention, but we have a brief page on prevention for you that it explains those dollars. And then tribal information is the last page. And then we'll get you that additional document.
That reminds me, there was a question on the funds that were needed for the prevention, that the money has come through the other agency that – but then you're using it for your, is it the quota deadlines? Remind me what the issue was, because that was a question we wanted to post.
Oh, I remember what it was.
We're talking about two different types of
prevention. We had a discussion that Workforce Services provides some training.
That's right.
And a preschool certification.
That's it. Yeah.
And the question.
Okay. The question I had, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is if within Workforce Services there's a program called Wyoming or Y Quality Counts. It's mm-hmm. a child care mm-hmm. training program. Mm-hmm. If we were to cut that program, how would it affect your agency? Because they told us that your agency uses that program as a certification towards something, and they didn't really tell us what that
they didn't know how much towards. We could cut if we could cut
correct
and what the impact would be.
Do
you know the answer? You don't. Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, if you were to cut the Wyoming quality counts, if you were to cut that program, that directly would affect what's referred to as the Child Care Development Block Grant or the Child Care Development Fund. Those are closely related. It would be I don't believe that this is embellishment. I believe that it could be nearly potentially catastrophic for Wyoming families. It would be a big, big deal. It would result in I'm not even sure what the total would be, but there would be a lot of money at stake.
I think the representation was there are matching fund requirements. And so our question to them was, well, if it's a matching fund requirement, and I forget we're talking about $17 million. And the question,
$18 million, Mr. Chairman. Nick just whispered.
And the question was, well, if we cut $1 million, are we still meeting our match requirements? So are we overmatching to any degree?
Mr. Chairman, we are currently overmatching that grant. I don't know by how much. I could look into that for you.
Figure that's where we're really talking about is if we're overmatching, and it won't affect the block grant funding, and also the impact as well. But that's the question that we have.
Mr. Chair, and I want to make sure that I've got it right because my impression was Workforce Services was fulfilling the training component required mm-hmm. for the match. DFS provides the matching funds through state funds. Have I got that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, we believe that is correct. Yes.
And so follow up, Mr. Chairman. So the question really comes back that if we cut the Y quality counts thing, that takes away the qualifier component that allows you to receive those federal funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Representative Larson, we would have to look into that, and we can look into that and get more information on what what the impact of cutting that would be to Department of Family Services.
And Mr. So maybe look at some options. I mean, is that something that you guys could provide training? We don't know that we completely have our head around all of the training that goes on for that, but we know that Workforce Services have been providing it. And is that something that you guys could provide in-house as part of the meeting that grant stuff?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, my initial gut reaction to that is we probably could. It probably would be a program similar to Y Quality Counts and would probably cost a similar amount. That's my initial blush at it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment on that as well. Representative Larson, I think the answer would be if we had the staff and we had the resources, we could probably do that. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I don't believe that we currently have the staff to do that unless we eliminated other tasks that they're currently mandated to do.
So then going back to our fundamental question is, if we're overmatching, and so that in order to meet the matching requirements, we'd like to know what that figure is. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. There's all these little things just kind of floating up around there. So. Anything further? Once again, thanks a lot. Appreciate it, and appreciate the update. Okay. We're adjourned until noon recess.
Noon recess.